Hey everyone, Chris GST here, web admin for pwponderings.com. Welcome to the weekly newscast. It was a big week, tons of results to go over. Of course, you can find them all at pwponderings.com. Did want to mention that co-founder Kevin Ford will be joining us a little bit to talk about some Evolve and Nova Pro that's coming on. And we also have special guest Stutzy of CWF Mid-Atlantic fame, a lot of other stuff that he does in the South. So should be a lot of good discussion. But yeah, let's just start off with results here. Kevin Ford will be on to talk some Evolve, but I wanted to mention some of the major things. Of course, go to pwponderings.com. We have results for the debuting show for Vessel Circus, IWC presenting House of Hardcore 20, AIW, CWF Mid-Atlantic, Reign of Honor, Evolve, just tons and tons of results up there. But yeah, I'm going to start with Ring of Honor. They held their show on the 15th in Dearborn, part of the Glory by Honor weekend. You know, I just got to say this, probably going to be talking about this on a podcast of Honor also, but it just kind of seems, I don't want to say this in a bad way, but Glory by Honor weekend used to be kind of a more important weekend for Ring of Honor, and, you know, obviously this is a, there's a different time, and Ring of Honor is a much different company than it used to be, and maybe, hey, I'm one of those guys that has to get over that, but it just, it did not feel like a Glory by Honor weekend, particularly when you consider the importance that that event held in the past. It just, I don't know, just wasn't the same, put it that way. So anyway, actually, we're going to talk about the the Chicago event that held on the 14th first. Anyway, it just, like I said, just didn't really feel that big. But some of the major happenings: Donovan Dijak defeating Beer City Bruiser, and Punishment Martinez. Dijak hit the Featurized on Bruiser to score the pinfall victory. I guess they're kind of going with the story that Prince Nana is still, you know, disappointed in his loss on the pay-per-view, but they're kind of rebuilding him in a different way. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. Kamatachi defeated Angel De Oro, ACH, and Nick Jackson. Jay Briscoe defeated Dalton Castle. Motor City Machine Guns and Jay White defeated The Cabinet. They got the pinfall over Caprice Coleman. The Cabinet attacked them, laying them out in the middle of the ring and kneeling over them after or before leaving. So The Cabinet getting a stronger bit push here. Obviously, with the six-man going on, you know, one of the the few recurring teams. But, you know, I don't know. We'll just see how that works out on television. Colt Cabana defeated Mark Briscoe. Jay Lethal defeated Matt Jackson. There was a spot, there was a low blow to Lethal. Nick Jackson came out, and there was, the super kicks and all that stuff. Christopher Daniels and Frank Kazarian also came to the ringside. There was a lot of chaos. Lethal hit the Lethal Injection to win the match, and then Daniels and Kazarian challenged the Young Bucks for an impromptu tag team title match. The Addiction defeated the Young Bucks by disqualification. And then you saw Adam Cole and Adam Page interfere. Cole threw Daniels onto the table, set up on the outside. Frisch and O'Reilly came down to the ringside, and they started the main event right after that. And it was Red Dragon going up against Adam Cole and Adam Page. Adam Page tapped out to an ankle lock from Fish. Kind of probably saw that coming. You're not going to pin or submit the world champion. But this still leads into the storyline of Fish and O'Reilly kind of going into final battle, with O'Reilly challenging probably for the world title. You never know what will happen, but I think that's pretty much how that's going to go. And then that led into the 15th show in Dearborn that I mentioned before. Yeah, Jay White defeating Donovan Dijak. After the match, Dijak laid White out with a big boot, but Nana seemed to be disappointed, so it's kind of that hit-or-miss thing again. The All Night Express defeated the Tempura Boys. You saw Kamaitachi defeat Angel De Oro. Obviously, the CMML connection, probably not as strong as the New Japan, and then Kamaitachi connected to the Addiction, so kind of obvious that he'd get the win here. I'm interested to see if Angel De Oro was impressive, though, when it comes out on VOD. There was an attack on Scarlett Bordeaux from Kelly Klein. It builds off stuff that they've done in the past in that region, so I guess we'll see if it leads into a match, or is just supposed to be a little bit more character building for Kelly Klein. The Motor City Machine Guns defeated Silas Young and Beer City Bruiser. Said to be a pretty decent match. Alex Shelley cut a long promo afterwards talking about wanting the tag titles and adding people to their cause, so I guess we'll see what that means. Damian Martinez and BJ Whitmer defeated Blake Acumen and Jim Beardsley. Obviously, just kind of a squash match. Adam Page defeated ACH. Jay Lethal defeated Frankie Kazarian, and then the Ring of Honor Champions vs. All-Stars main event match took place. So it was an elimination match of the Ring of Honor World Champion Adam Cole, TV Champion Bobby Fish, the Tag Team Champions, the Young Bucks, going up against Dalton Castle, Colt Cabana, and the Briscoes. Bobby Fish eliminated Jay Briscoe with a small package. Mark Briscoe eliminated by Fish with a roll-up. Adam Cole eliminated Mark Briscoe with the last call. Dalton Castle eliminated Adam Cole, and then proposed that he and Cabana challenge the Young Bucks for the tag titles right then and there. So another impromptu tag team match, but the Young Bucks defeated Dalton Castle and Colt Cabana afterwards. Colt Cabana was taken out with the super kicks. Obviously, that battle has been going on since the Best in the World pay-per-view, I believe. And it was actually kind of interesting. They posted on Twitter that Colt Cabana just didn't want to give that post-match interview. Shows him, obviously, in a little bit of he's angry at the loss. So I'm intrigued to see where that goes. You know, Dalton Castle and Colt Cabana being a tag team, that's fine. I don't really know if it helps Dalton Castle, but I might be in the minority on that because Colt Cabana, very popular, obviously has a lot of name recognition. So if this helps Dalton Castle get to where he wants to go, that's great, but just always seen Dalton Castle more as a singles guy. So that's just my thoughts on it. AIW held Season of the Witch. This is obviously Saturday, October 15th. Main event matches, I guess I'll just get into that. Of course, all the results up on PW Ponderings. Laredo Kid defeated Gringo Loco and Triton. Rex Brody defeated Brian Carson. Alex Daniels retained his AIW Intense title, defeating Eric Ryan. And then Raymond Rowe defeated Jeff Cobb. Kind of the matches I would assume most people are interested in. CWF Mid-Atlantic held Fallout at the Moose Lodge on the 15th, saw Snooty Fox defeat Mike Jordan. The Rising Generation League champion, Dirty Daddy, defeated James Ryan. The Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champions, Aaron Biggs and Mecha Mercenary, defeated Handsome Mitch Connor and Donnie Dollars to retain their title. The Television Champion, Eric Andrews, pinned Smith Garrett to retain the title. That was in a four-way also involving Eric Rowell and Nick Richards. Kind of looking forward to that. I mean, Smith Garrett is such a good wrestler. So is Eric Rowell. Nick Richards has his own. Kind of a hybrid style from him, but you know, I think that he's got a good story going on right now in CWF. And then Eric Andrews still kind of continuing his rise as the TV champion. So then we had the PWI Ultra J Crown Champion Chad Sterling defeated Ethan Alexander Sharp. Andrew Everett defeated Roy Wilkins by pinfall. And, you know, it was just kind of a lot of fun, I think, on this show. Of course, we always encourage you to check out Mid-Atlantic Worldwide. And, as you know, like I said, we'll have Stutzy on to talk about some of the results here on this show. So Evolve 70 and 71 took place over the weekend. And it is they've been leading up to this tag match or title match between Paige and Thatcher. And okay, I haven't seen the iPay-per-views, but I'm interested to see the guys that they're building. Obviously, Paige is one of them. So we had Darby Allin defeat Anthony Henry, Nathan Cruz defeat Jason Kincaid, Fred Yehi defeating Dustin, the Gatekeepers defeating Bunk and Funk, Timothy Thatcher defeated All Ego Ethan Page to retain his championship. But after the match, Stokely Hathaway came down with ring with Amy Rose. They offered Thatcher their services. The champ was impressed, and he just kind of walked off, kind of not doing a whole much for Paige there. Again, I didn't see the iPay-per-view, so I don't know. Maybe Paige looked good and lost, but it seemed kind of dismissive. Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. Matt Riddle defeated Aaron Fox in the main event. And then the big story coming out of that is that you saw a united catch point leading into 71. So what that means for the titles and all that stuff involved, they're fighting, you know, with Galloway and that whole troop of people kind of trying to bring down Evolve. So on 71, you had a non-title fight to finish. Drew Gulak defeated Timothy Thatcher via submission. So Drew Gulak gets another win over the Evolve champion. Tracy Williams defeated Jason Kincaid. The Gatekeepers defeated Joe Coleman and Eric Locker. Ethan Page defeated Sammy Callahan. So a good strong showing for him, especially over a guy like Callahan. Dustin defeated Darby Allin. Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Fred Yehi. And Chris Hero defeated Matt Riddle with the rolling elbow to the back of the head. After the match, Tracy Williams came down. He challenged Hero to a match since Hero had already beaten Gulak and Riddle. Hero laid out Williams. Galloway and Dustin attacked Riddle on the floor. Gulak on the mic ran down Galloway and said that, you know, there's going to end. There's going to be a unified catch point, and they're going to win the war. So, interesting to see what they're going to do from here. So, I like I said, I'm kind of intrigued by it, but we'll see. So, anyway, let's get to talking with Kevin Ford. So, Kevin, how's it going, man?
Not too bad. It's been a very long time since you and I have gotten to be on a podcast together, so this is super exciting. It took Jerome going to another continent for us to talk to each other, I guess.
Literally. So,
legit, but he is in China. That is why I am here to help carry the newscast to its former glory.
Exactly. Possibly even higher than its former glory, if there was some.
I would say definitely higher.
So I went down the results, but you mentioned before the show started that you had some thoughts on the Evolve shows, and so I haven't seen them on iPay-Per-View, but some of the major happenings, obviously Catch Point seemingly united again, Ethan Page getting a title shot, which they kind of pushed, and then from the description, kind of didn't seem to do very much for him afterwards. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, any thoughts that you had?
Yeah, it's weird. It feels like almost the tale of two different cards, because I did not see either show myself, so I should throw that out there. But it just seems like they really bungled the Ethan Page, Timothy Thatcher thing. I got to read our friend Larry Zonker's review and a couple other reviews that were out there, and it just seemed like it was just a really oddly constructed match that didn't really capitalize on all of the good faith Ethan Page got at the end of that the Last of All show, with him and the former Devastation Corporation, now the Gatekeepers, kind of running shop and you know, taking out Gargano for Matt Riddle to save the day. So I thought the way that they constructed that title match was very weird, but a lot of the other matches on both shows sounded really, really good. Like, you know, Matt Riddle versus AR Fox is one of those matches I didn't really know I wanted to see until like it was booked. Same kind of can be said for Zack Sabre Jr. and Freddie Ahai, so I'm looking forward to seeing those. I thought it was also pretty odd that Matt Riddle lost to Chris Hero, because I think Riddle's certainly one of the forerunners to unseat Thatcher for the Evolve Championship if they don't do a transitional champion. I think if by WrestleMania weekend Riddle will be the Evolve champion. I think that's a direction that they should be headed in anyhow. And I kind of thought what they were going with here was they were going to have, since Riddle lost to Thatcher back in August, they were going to do a thing where he beats AR Fox, the first Evolve champion, he beats Chris Hero, the second Evolve champion, and then he beats Drew Galloway somewhere down the line, the third Evolve champion, to earn a rematch against the current and fourth Evolve champion, Timothy Thatcher. But then he lost to Hero, and I thought that was a little odd. But I do think Catchpoint being together is ultimately pretty cool, especially because it could serve as a red herring if they want to do something interesting with one of the guys getting a title and the other one turning their back on whoever becomes the champion, whether it's Gulak or Riddle, more than likely. And I was really happy to see Jason Kincaid getting a shot in Evolve. He's a guy I've seen on Ring of Honor television a couple of times, and he's really impressed in all of his outings. And I know he's been on a Ring of Honor house show here and there, but it doesn't seem like they're ready to invest in him, and I couldn't tell you why. But as far as I'm concerned, their loss is Evolve's gain, and I really hope Kincaid becomes somebody who can be a full-time member of the Evolve roster. It seems like people were really impressed with his match with Hot Sauce Tracy William on Evolve 72, I think it was, or Evolve 71 was the Sunday show. So definitely some really interesting stuff here, some perplexing stuff in what way, but the thing is I always find with Evolve is there's a lot of stuff I find perplexing, but usually down the line I can come back and see where they were coming from. So despite how I feel now, I may feel differently in a few months or so.
I was going to ask, when you were talking about possible title holders, you know, Drew Gulak, they have this running storyline of him and Thatcher, I would say trading wins, but it seems like Gulak gets the better more times than not. But do you think his involvement with WWE and the whole Cruiserweight thing, it excludes him from ever becoming an Evolve champion, even though there's the obvious relationship between the two entities?
So what you're basically saying is you think there may be something to Gulak becoming champion because of maybe a potential WWE crossover sort of situation?
I'm saying that he wouldn't be champion. I'm asking if you would think that would take him out of contention, because they keep having him beat Thatcher, and it's like, well, why do you keep having him beat the guy that's your champion if there's nothing to go to there? And then also, like you, I thought Hero winning was a little weird given that whole storyline of, yeah, Riddle beating past champions.
I don't know if it necessarily takes him out of contention. I mean, there is something to be said where you know, I don't know what contracts or deals these guys have, but I have to imagine if WWE gives you rings you and says, we need you on these weekends house shows, or we need you on Raw Monday, you don't really say no. You go and you do it, and that's what's best for your career, and probably the best for just not just your wallet, but also getting more eyes on you and all that other stuff. So maybe there is something to that, but I don't know. I feel like they've had Gulak. You know, he's been beating Thatcher since, what, Mania Weekend 2014? And I think he just lost in their title match a couple months ago. So I think that's been a very long executed story, and it would not surprise me at all if Gulak were to be the one to unseat Thatcher. In fact, I think that would be a really interesting thing, is if we see Catchpoint is all together, but then once Gulak gets the Evolved title, that adds a rift in the group where Riddle wants the title, or vice versa, where Riddle's the champion, but Drew Gulak has always kind of been the leader of Catchpoint, and that causes issues with them. So I think that's another way you can go with having those guys together. That's why I kind of said Catchpoint being together and looking like this strong unit could be a red herring, because that could no longer be the case very quickly.
Yeah, I like how they've been building up. But yeah, that's what I was thinking too, is that they just keep having Gulak beat the champion, and I think he only has like one or two losses to him, so it's intriguing. But yeah, and then Ethan Page, like you mentioned, just, I mean, he's a guy that just kind of fumbled the ball now, and I don't know why, but you're right, maybe looking down the line, we'll say, oh, okay, that's what they did that for.
Right, you know, and I wasn't necessarily expecting him to give him the title right away in his first title opportunity. Part of me actually thought they could have, because I thought he might be a good champion to have for a few months and then have Riddle beat him somewhere down the line. But obviously they have a different opinion of mine. And to be fair, a lot of people said very complimentary things about the match with Sami Callihan he had the night after. So it's not as if he just had a weekend of duds. I think a lot of people didn't necessarily care for the overbooking of the title match necessarily, but the match that he had with Sami Callihan the night after is getting quite a bit of praise. So there is that, at least.
For sure. Yeah, no, that's a good, kind of a good week. Not great weekend, but good weekend for him. So looking forward to seeing the matches, as are you. I'm sure maybe there was some match work there that could justify us kind of being a little bit more hopeful.
But yeah, and you know, I think I'm hopefully going to head to the Joppa show next month, so I'm looking forward to that. And
all right.
You know, and I think even if I don't necessarily agree with some of the matches and the outcomes, if nothing else, I am interested in what's going on in Evolve right now.
Yeah, but I was actually going to ask, just before we start talking about some Nova Pro that has a big show coming up this weekend, it was Glory by Honor weekend, and, you know, it just did not feel like it. I'll just put it that way. I know that wasn't Glory by Honor kind of one of the shows that brought you into Ring of Honor, and, you know, 2016 version of it, just kind of there.
Yeah, I mean, Glory by Honor, for all intents and purposes, is the longest running show they've had. Like, that's been an annual institution, because Glory by Honor took place in October of 2002, the first year of Ring of Honor's inception, and no other event they've had has had that long of a history as Glory by Honor has. So to see it kind of go from being one of the flagship events and almost a can't-miss show or weekend to being a very forgettable show. I couldn't even tell you what happened on Glory by Honor this weekend, to be honest. I think it kind of hurts when we're in the day where if a show's not a pay-per-view or doesn't have New Japan talent or isn't a TV taping, people really don't pay that much attention to it, unfortunately. And I think it's weird that Glory by Honor has become one of those events, but what can you do?
Exactly. But yeah, so speaking of big shows, Nova Pro, October 22nd, Saturdays of Thunder, gotta go for that movie theme title, taking place in Springfield, Virginia, at the Annandale Sports Center. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, you are, Kurt. Good job.
Thank God. But yeah, so that's, I guess we'll just start at the bottom of the card. Tickets are available now, tinyurl.com/Nova1022. It's Nova and the date, October 22nd.
Yeah, actually, before we get into the card, I do want to point out that there's very limited front row seats left. And if you buy your front row seat ahead of time, you're automatically entered into a raffle to win a free DVD copy of Nova Project 2, our anniversary show from last month. And if we sell out of the front row tickets before shows happen, we'll be announcing Donovan Dijak's opponent for next month's show. So if you're coming to need a front row ticket, do that, and you can not only see a great wrestling show, but win a free DVD of last month's awesome show. So just want to throw that out there before we get into this card.
Can I buy a ticket for front row and just be entered, or do you have to actually be at the show?
I mean, you could always buy the ticket, give your ticket to a fan, and then, you know, make them give you the DVD copy. I don't see why that. You know, you, listen, Chris, your $25 is just as good as anybody else, as far as I'm concerned.
I appreciate that. So let's start with the matches. The first time ever, Team IOU, Kerry Offal and Nick Iggy versus Cutie and the Beast of Bo Crockett and Innocent Isaiah. Kerry Offal, obviously, he does a podcast now for our website, and I hear the next upcoming one is pretty awesome. So maybe I'm a little biased pulling for Team IOU. But what can you tell us about this?
Well, yeah, I actually listened to that podcast that he did, and I really enjoyed it. So I've never got the opportunity to meet him, so I'm very excited to meet him and tell him in person, you know, hey, welcome to the website. I enjoy your podcast and all that stuff. And I've seen Team IOU before in FIP and some other Southern independents, but this is the first chance I'll get to see them live, so that's really exciting. But Cutie and the Beast is kind of a homegrown Nova pet project in a way. These are two guys that were actually thrown together as a tag team on our January event against the Bravado Brothers because the team advertised take on the Bravados was unable to make it. And although they lost, we really liked what we saw out of them. And we thought, you know, there's kind of something here with these guys. And even they were a little reluctant to team with each other, especially Bro Crockett. But ever since that show, they've won every single one of their matches, including the rematch with Bravados they had last month. And they've become, dare I say, the most popular act in Nova Pro right now. So they're really the team that, if you're a debuting team coming into Nova Pro, they're the ones you want to target and defeat to make a name for yourselves. And like I said, I like what I've seen at Team IOU. They're a very unique team. I don't think they've ever wrestled in before. So some people may not be familiar with them, especially some of the Virginia crowd. So I think this is a chance for them to make their name in a new market. And if you've not seen them before, you're really in for a treat.
We have Logan Easton LaRue and Alexander James versus an officer and a gentleman of Chuck Taylor and Dan Barry. Or Dustin, I guess, if Justin Houston is listening to this. That's Dustin.
So. I'm pretty sure he'll be Chuck Taylor in Nova Pro. We don't have any other people who are trademarking his name in Nova Pro for now. Although if the new Chuck Taylor came in, we would have to figure out something. Yeah, actually, it's Logan Easton LaRue. I know a lot of people get confused. It's spelled like Lash LaRue's name,
right.
So I don't blame you anymore. But yeah, he had he's coming off a big win in the main event of Nova Project 2. He defeated Sanjay Dutt in a steel cage match, which, to be honest, was not a result I expected. But Alexander and James is a friend of his, so they're coming in as a tag team, and this will be both Chuck Taylor and Dan Barry's debut in the company. And I'm Chikara fan number one, so being able to see Chuck Taylor and call one of his matches is going to be super fun. And I've not seen the team of officers and gentlemen in person either, so this is really a show where we get a few tag teams in the mix really looking to make a name for themselves and get some opportunities. So, you know, I think there's a lot of people who haven't even seen a Nova Pro show are certainly aware of who Chuck Taylor and Dan Barry are. So I think just having them on the show and putting them against Logan Easton LaRue and Alexander James kind of raises that team's stock and gets more attention on them. So, again, I think this should be pretty fun.
You have Eric Royal, who I believe has been going on quite a win streak, right, in Nova Pro? Going up against – okay, am I going to mispronounce – Rayo? Is it?
I believe it is Ryo.
Ryo, okay.
Ryo, right. Either way, yeah. It's I can't blame you for mispronouncing. So, yes, Eric Royal, the ace of the Mid-Atlantic, as he likes to call himself, he is, in fact, undefeated in Nova Pro. He's only missed a show, but he's defeated Chase Owens, Hot Sauce Tracy Williams, Donovan Dijak, David Starr, Tim Donst. The list is just – he's not just beaten nobodies. He's really beaten some of the cream of the crop in independent wrestling. So I think there's a lot of people who would argue that Eric Royal is the top guy at Nova Pro right now, especially with no championship to stake their claim. But were there a championship, I would say Eric Royal would be a great person to be the inaugural champion. But Ryo is an interesting character. He is actually under contract from another wrestler named Brandon Money Green, who is pretty much just like a villain out of a Scrooge McDuck book. Like, just this crazed millionaire character who's just a real jerk and does not treat Ryo very well. Last month, Ryo was in a six-man tag with Frankie Picard and Sage Phillips, and Money Green was not there. He was on a cruise. And Ryo actually scored a pinfall victory to win that six-man tag for his team. And I think Money Green was pretty upset about it because a lot of the times I think he berates Ryo too much. I think he's more of a distraction than a help to Ryo in his matches. So I think Money Green, out of the frustration of seeing Ryo get a win without him there, said, "All right, you know what, Ryo? If you can defeat the undefeated man, I'll free you from your contract." Which sounds nice on paper, but this is one of those things where I think someone makes an ultimatum with you to kind of seem nice, but deep down they know it's so almost impossible that it's not really a nice thing to do. You know what I mean?
It doesn't sound nice at all. So.
Right, so I fear for poor Ryo. I'm not sure if he's going to be one to beat Eric Royal here. Although he did score a win last month, so who's to say? But, you know, really what I get out of this is that Money Green is still a jerk.
That's really all you have to say. You have the Storm of Entrails, Dan O'Hare and Schlock versus Sanjay Dutt and John Kerman. I had a question about this. So, you know, you mentioned the cage match. And, you know, Dutt was on the losing end of that. So, so LaRoe is kind of moving on from that, but you have John Kerman, who has teamed with Dutt before in the past for Nova Pro, but up against the Storm of Entrails. So how did that, or is this just a tag team matchup?
Well, so Sanjay Dutt, with the cage match loss, he will have lost a couple of matches in a row now for Nova Pro. And John Kerman's been by his side ever since this feud really began. Really got heated up back in March. And they've been real-life best of friends for about a good 15 years. Kerman actually hadn't wrestled for about 2 years until Nova Pro came around, and once he heard his buddy Sanjay was wrestling there and wanted to see what it was all about, because he's from the Northern Virginia area, so he kind of got involved. So I think for Sanjay, it's sort of taken a step back to try to get back in his groove, reestablish himself. You know, he lost that cage match, which I don't think he's expecting, so I think he's going to go with Kerman, maybe try to put his head on right, and see what happens from there. Well, the Storm of Entrails is a new tag team that's from the Dojo Wars, the CCW Dojo Wars. And I think they scored a big win over Mecha Mercenary and Aaron Biggs at the Nova Project 2. So I think while Sanjay is trying to get his head on straight and have his buddy help him do so, for the Storm of Entrails, this is almost like a reward for them getting that big win at Nova Project 2 to go up against someone who's internationally renowned as Sanjay Dutt. I mean, if they were, I would wager to say this is probably the biggest match of the Storm of Entrails' career up to this. Excuse me, up to this point. So if they were able to beat Sanjay Dutt, that's big for them as a team. And you know, if they are able to beat Sanjay and Kerman, that's three losses in a row for Sanjay Dutt, who, for all intents and purposes, has been the poster child for Nova Pro. I mean, he's an international superstar, but he also was born and raised in this area. So Nova Pro is his baby almost in a way. So there's a lot on the line for both these teams mentally and career-wise.
And it should be noted that the sandwich squad of Biggs and Mercenary, they are noted that they're going to be appearing. So I guess the Storm of Entrails better watch out. You know, people remember when they have wins and losses.
Do you know about the sandwich squad, Chris GST?
I know of Aaron Biggs and Mecha Mercenary from CWF Mid-Atlantic shows, but I don't, like, is there a story behind the sandwich squad name?
So, a lot of people online who follow Beyond Wrestling know that Drew Cordero's mother gets a lot of praise for the concession stand she's able to put together, but I give a lot of praise to the Nova Pro concession stand for some great baked goods, their meatball subs, and some other stuff they have on hand. And so, this team, when they won one of their matches, they were gifted meatball subs. And it became a thing where when they would win matches, they would win meatball subs. And in August, when they lost, they got meatball shoved in their face by Dan O'Hare of the Storm of Entrails and Reed Bentley. So this team, a lot of people fight for the love of wrestling. They fight for money. They fight for glory. These guys, they just fight for a sandwich.
But meatball sandwiches, which are probably pretty good, so...
Yeah, they're delicious. Like, that is a selling point in and of itself.
There you go. So everyone at the show, I want to hear how these sandwiches are. But there you go, the story behind the sandwich squad. Or I guess the sandwich squad, if you're going to write it that way, sure.
Right, you know, really it's reader's discretion.
There you go. I mean, if you're from the South. Oh, wait, I'm not Justin Houston. That's rude. So you also have the PWI Ultra J title. Chet Sterling, fantastic wrestler, been all over CWF Worldwide, defending title against Bobby Shields, who also on quite a good winning streak in Nova Pro. Been a, you know, really good hand. I like some of his work. So yeah, what can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so the PWI Ultra J title, Nova Pro is part of the PWI family, the Pro Wrestling International family that houses CWF Mid-Atlantic, the PWX promotion, and a bunch of other different groups. And we're fortunate to be in part of that group. And so we've had multiple PWI Ultra J title defenses on our shows. Ethan Case had one in January against Sanjay Dutt, and Cedric Alexander defended the title three different times in Nova Pro. One of those occasions actually was against Bobby Shields in May, and it was Bobby Shields' first loss in Nova Pro. Beta Scott was ringside with Cedric Alexander, and she threw in a pair of brass knucks, but some miscommunication got those knucks in Bobby Shields' hands. And Bobby thought about using them. The fans told him not to. He listened to the fans. He threw the knucks aside, and as he turned around, he ate a lumbar check from Cedric Alexander and lost the match. And something in Bobby Shields' head told him, if I just hadn't listened to the fans, I would have won that match. And that kind of was the turning point for him. You know, he lost to Tim Donce the next month, and he didn't shake Donce's hand. And then he started aligning himself with Logan East and LaRoe and just really became this sour, arrogant person. And something else that Bobby Shields has done over the summer is get really heavily involved in bodybuilding competitions. So he's kind of rebuilt himself as Bobby the Bobby Shields. And last month he introduced his new, he has some long name, but I'm just going to say manager for the sake of ease, Marcus Dowling. And him and Chet Sterling had a non-title match last month where Chet won, thanks to, I would say, a pretty heavy assist from Marcus Dowling. But neither here nor there, he did defeat the champion, and because of this defeat, he gets the opportunity to face Chet Sterling in a title match this month. And I also think for Bobby Shields, because Cedric Alexander was the guy who ended his undefeated streak, and Chet Sterling is the guy who beat Cedric Alexander for the PWI Ultra J title, since Bobby Shields can't go fight Cedric Alexander, beating the guy who beat the guy who beat him is just as good. So I think if Bobby Shields and Marcus Dowling have their way, we're going to have a new PWI Ultra J champion this Saturday. But we'll see what Chet Sterling has to say about it.
Absolutely. But hey, it all makes sense when you break it down that way. And then in what I can only assume will be the main event, an I Quit match, Brandon Day going up against Tim Donce. And I mean, these guys have had what? No DQ matches. And I mean, Tim Donce also, I think some could make the argument, sometimes the face of Nova Pro also. So, I mean, he's been in relaxed. Last month, it was Matt Tremont, right?
Yes.
Which was a death match or something?
No, it was not a death match. It was just like a relaxed rule sort of situation.
Okay, gotcha. But yeah, so this I Quit match, what can people expect?
Mayhem. Gosh, I'm really frightened as to what these two are going to do. And the Springfield building, for those of you who didn't see our March show, you've seen Sanjay Dutt and Logan East LaRoe. They had a fight that went all around the building, and I have expectations that Donce and Day are going to do the same. I think there is something to be said about Donce kind of becoming a face of Nova Pro. I didn't realize this until I talked to him, but he's pretty much only wrestling in CZW, AIW, and Nova, and that's kind of it. I mean, there's probably a couple other like smaller places he'll wrestle here and there, but you know, it was when I was talking to him, I was very flattered to find out that Nova Pro was one of the places that he made a regular stop, and I thought that was super cool that in his less prolific wrestling days at this time, and especially, you know, he may have to be careful because some of his health stuff, he's chosen to come to Nova Pro, and I know for a fact he's helped put it on the map. There were plenty of fans when he took a month off asked for him, and so we're super happy to have him there. But yeah, him and Brandon Day have sort of had this thing building for a few months. Day likes to bring a chain with him to the ring, and when Matt Tremont made his debut back in March, he used that chain illegally to beat Tremont. And he did the same to Donce in May. And then, just for fun, after Donce beat Bobby Shields in July, Brandon Day beat him up with the chain again, leading to that match you were talking about, the no DQ match in August, where Brandon Day choked out Tim Donce to the point where Donce was unconscious, and the match had to be called off. And officials and other Nova officials had to come out and make Brandon Day stop choking with the chain. And so, for Nova Project 2, Tim Donce said, Brandon Day, I want you in an I Quit match. And Brandon Day said, I've already beat you twice. What do I have to gain from this? Why don't you prove to me that you want this match so badly? So Donce called up his friend, his buddy, the other guy that Brandon Day kind of screwed over, Matt Tremont,
and they had a war at Nova Project 2. And after that, Tim Knotts called out Brandon Day, basically saying, I think I've proven my point now. And so now, finally, Tim Knotts will get his I Quit match here in October between these two. And like I said, it's going to be mayhem. It's going to be carnage. It's probably the match I'm most looking forward to taking place on that night. If what they've done in the past is any indication, whew, you don't want to miss the show.
And it all takes place this Saturday, Saturdays of Thunder, as you said, Springfield, Virginia. So, Kevin, awesome rundown of the show. We're going to have, I guess, your friend, Brad Stutz, on coming on pretty shortly. So, Brad Stutz, or lovingly known as Stutzy, has joined us on the line. Man, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Kevin Ford is also on the line. So, Kevin, you two have met, I believe, at several Nova Pro shows?
My good friend and fellow Barry Darso enthusiast.
He's a great man.
Yes, he is.
One of the best.
Yes. Particularly now with us having a kind of a Southern wrestling podcast. I'm sure we'll be talking about him quite a few times. But yeah, Stutz, so just wanted to kind of talk to you, you know, about a ton of topics. CWF Mid-Atlantic, obviously a ton of buzz going on with the worldwide. Trevor Lee's title reign, lots of topics. But I think right off the bat, we should just talk about the connection to WWE. You have No Way Jose, who used to be part of CWF Mid-Atlantic, and obviously the revival. I believe... Only did both of them compete for CWF, or just the one?
Just Scott Dawson.
Yeah,
I actually had only met Dash a time or two. Just our paths had just never crossed, but I heard about him a lot, and he was all over the circuit. Just kind of our paths didn't really cross that much. But Dawson, I knew very well.
How has that been for CWF? Like how is the, with No Way Jose, I mean, just that he has that charisma that everyone talks about. And he's getting some better opponents than the WWE. So, you know, you trace it back to CWF. How does the character, quote unquote, compare?
Well, No Way Jose is really cool in the sense of they changed literally nothing but his name. So... You know, he looks the same and sounds the same, and a lot of the mannerisms are similar. So that's really cool, as opposed to, you know, sometimes if they and dress them up and the person that you see wind up on NXT is barely recognizable as, you know, whatever their persona on the indies was. So No Way Jose is really cool because they changed almost nothing. And Scott Dawson is not drastically dissimilar from Casey McKnight on the indies. And so stuff like that is really, really cool. And of course, like you watch TNA, you know, Trevor Lee is Trevor Lee. That to me has been one of the more interesting things to see unfold is, you know, it wasn't terribly long ago when, you know, they even changed Kenta's name, and now they're not changing anybody's name, and they're barely changing their presentation. So, that makes everything a lot more recognizable, and that's, I'm sure an like someone like CWF, but it helps that he kind of looks the same and acts the same in our footage. It's been great. You know, we got to be on WWE.com a couple of times and stuff like that. Whenever they do those little features and stuff, it's always good we pick up new followers, we get new inquiries about training, and I can honestly say the training program here, the school that we have, has picked up since we had someone from a recent class go to WWE. I believe that there's probably a correlation there. It's great sort of for our street cred, you might say.
Yeah, I would think so. I think also a name that is out there would be Cedric Alexander as well. I mean, he has just become beloved because of the Cruiserweight Classic. And, you know, now featuring part of the Cruiserweight division there on Raw. And, you know, he had a ton of good matches. Obviously, Fusito's Mid-Atlantic defending the PWA Ultra J title. And then as Kevin Ford was talking about with the Nova Pro show, with Chad Sterling having defeated him, but he also had good defenses in Nova Pro. I mean, Cedric Alexander, God, you know, this was a guy just a few years ago. We were kind of wondering what he was going to do with his career. And now, undoubtedly, just one of the most popular guys out there.
Yeah, and I'm so beyond thrilled it happened to anybody better. I said it on his last night with us, which we were fortunate to actually have his absolute last match sort of in North Carolina and on the Indies. It was us, and then from there he went to Chikara and Battle of Los Angeles, and then that was pretty much it. So we really got to have pretty much his last indie match when he did pass the Ultra J title to Chet Sterling. And I think is one of those guys that asks not what the show can do for him, but he asks what he can do for the show. And it's exceptionally rare to find someone like that. It's even more rare to find someone where the best performer is also the nicest guy, is also the easiest person to do business with. Incredibly rare, and Cedric Alexander was all those things. So I'm completely thrilled for his success, and genuinely believe that, like, it could not have happened to a better guy.
So, you know, speaking of your champion, and Kevin, feel free to chime in anytime you want, but Trevor Lee, he obviously known from Impact Wrestling, though I don't know, we'll see how long Impact stays around, but, you know, he has been your champion for over 230 days now and still counting. And from your last show, from Fallout, any thoughts on that? Because it seems like we are now building more and more to Andrew Everett, even though they are tag team partners in a lot of places. They're well known for training together, but also wrestling together. They've had a few matches here and there, particularly in the past, that everyone could check out on CWF Worldwide, or actually, well, on your CWF YouTube page from the past. But, you know, you have Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett, which the two fantastic talents on their way up.
Yeah, I think there's always those guys who, for whatever reason, end up sort of married to each other. And I certainly think the two of them fit that mold. And you know, we thought that years ago, but even we could not have predicted where that rivalry would go and place the chance to perform. So yeah, I feel like that's something that whether it's necessarily mapped out and planned as a destination or whether it just sort of happens, I feel like guys are always going to kind of gravitate towards each other or be put in situations to gravitate towards each other. You know, they literally have kind of grown up together in the past, you know, 10 years. So it's always a special thing when they get together, and I hope it always will be. I hope it will never get to that point where people feel like they've seen it. And I think those two are so creative and so artistic that it won't be. They will always have the trick up their sleeve to spice it up.
I think a guy who you could probably also say this about is Eric Royal, who on this last CWF Worldwide got a title shot against Trevor Lee, and as noted during the match, you know, he has the most wins. I think you could probably see all of them on your YouTube page for CWF Mid-Atlantic. It's awesome to see his rise there and see him being used in other promotions as well. Is Eric Royal a guy that you think, you know, kind of it should be on the same radar? Because, I mean, truth be told, while I think he's a great wrestler, does not have the name recognition right now of a Trevor Lee or an Andrew Everett.
Yes. And I think the Eric Royal that we're seeing in CWF right now is very reflective of that mentality in a very real way. CWF is a neat place. There's a lot of creative freedom to the guys. In some ways, I'm very structured as an administrator, and in some ways, I'm very hands-off. And a lot of times, you know, I have a lot of trust in my guys to, you know, just get us where we need to go. And I think Eric turning up the intensity and finally getting to be more verbal on the microphone, be more real on the microphone, and really express how he feels inside. Whereas in the past, we kind of needed him as this knight in shining armor babyface. Now he's getting to really be the real person. And I think a part of that is he does feel somewhat for his friends, but somewhat resentful that he's not there. And I think very specifically, he feels sort of forgotten about by the people who, you know, the people who make these calls, the people who book, you know, the Battle of Los Angeles, or, you know, the people that seek out Americans to do these, you know, 2-week tours of England and things like that. I think he genuinely feels overlooked, and it is fueling this persona in a very real way, because he, like I said, he's getting to express what and how he really feels inside. So yeah, I absolutely think, you know, I mean, Eric is from Los Angeles. He's from Moreno Valley, California. I'm sure to go to the Battle of Los Angeles and compete would be a bucket list dream of his. And he's had to sit and watch, you know, three, counting Cedric Alexander, of his, you know, closest friends do it multiple times. And so, yeah, but it has fired him up, and in a very real way made him better than he's ever been. So it's neat. I kind of think that's neat as, you know, someone that's involved in the creative process. I always think it's neat when we can draw on how someone really feels about a topic and weave it into our narrative. And I think that's exactly what's unfolding with Eric. And yes, I absolutely think he's overlooked, underrated, and worthy of opportunity.
And I can, you know, I'll throw on top of that. It's one of the things I said when running down a preview of Nova beforehand is, you know, not only just because of his 6-0 record in Nova, but I think just with the body of work he's built in Nova Pro in just the 1 year, you know, he's a real contender for, I think, what many people would say would be the ace of the promotion. You know, I know he has the ace of the Mid-Atlantic moniker, but I think not only has his matches been great, but he's really shown a diversity amongst all his different matches, whether it be technical wrestling with Tim Donster and Hot Sauce Tracy Williams, or throwing strikes and exchanging some dives with David Starr and Donovan Dijak. He's just a remarkable wrestler and athlete overall, and he has this charisma, and there's something to him. And you know, I can completely understand professional jealousy in that, how that would cause him, especially in CWF, a place he would call home, to transform him. But I do kind of think, as some of these guys go to bigger and better places, your guys like your Eric Royals and Chet Sterlings, who you and I and anybody else who's paid attention to CWF for a while now know how great they are. You know, hopefully this means the spotlight opens up for them to take, and now the rest of the world can know how great they are too.
Yeah, that's definitely been the goal. You know, the goal as of, let me do some quick math here. You know, the goal as of, let's say, December 2014, as a nice round number, has been here, and I'll speak very candidly about it. The goal, the number one goal at CWF for the past, you know, going on almost 3 years now, has been get the next crop of guys ready. And again, I'll speak very candidly, so that when, not if, but when Trevor and Drew and Cedric and who knows who else, when those guys are no longer at our disposal, we won't be ECW after all the cool guys left. And that was a moment that I lived through as a fan, you know, watching some of those ECW TVs in 1999 and going like, you know, there towards the end when Taz and the Dudleys and, you know, everybody was leaving. And it stuck with me as a fan. So now, you know, fast forward however many years later, and I know in my heart that there will come a time that Trevor is exclusive to somebody else. There will come a time that Drew is exclusive to someone else. That time has already come for Cedric and for Manny, for that regard, No Way Jose. So there was a very conscious effort on our parts to sort of nurture the soil around Chet Sterling and Smith Garrett and Eric Royal and even a Nick Richards and you know, several others for that matter, to take good care of that, like I said, take good care of that soil so that that crop can grow. And yeah, I think we've been very successful. Again, speaking candidly, I think we've been very successful. And I think you can look at how many guys get a genuine, exuberant reaction, not just in our building, but anywhere. I think you can point to that as the track record. And that's been one of the truly gratifying things for me at Nova. Chet Sterling and Eric Royal in particular is watching their and hearing their reaction grow from event to event, from month to month, where those people at Nova Pro are adopting, you know, quote unquote, my guys as their guys. And that's very, very gratifying and kind of points to us doing something right, I think.
No, I agree. I saw a lot of people when Cedric Alexander appeared on Raw were saying, you know, I just saw this guy in Nova Pro a month ago, and now he's here on Raw, almost identifying him as a Nova Pro guy, despite the fact that he was only on three of our shows and has a large body of work in CWF and Ring of Honor and elsewhere. And that was very flattering. And it's also flattering to see, you know, if a card goes by where it happens to be someone like a Chet Sterling or a Tim Donst is unavailable, and you see the fans, they get a little disappointed that they're gone. And while you hate that they're disappointed, you almost are like, oh, okay, like these characters are catching on. These people are catching on. That it's the fact that they miss them means something's going right, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I think Nova's got the same, you know, Nova's got, can have the same, you know, pool, I guess you'd say, of talent where, you know, I think one of the goals at Nova is to get Rayo at a certain level, to get somebody like Dan O'Hare at a certain level. You know, guys that have been sort of good soldiers for us and have put it in the end zone anytime we've asked of them. I think there should be, and I think there is, an underlying sort of theme to Nova to get those guys propped up, you might say, and supported as stars. None more than Logan LaRue. I mean, he's I think he's the guy who more than anyone is probably going to be, if not already, is going to become identified as the Nova Pro guy. And I think that's wonderful. I think he's fantastic. But yeah, I think that's a real thing at Nova Pro too, as far as just kind of, you know, creating something that people latch on to and feel a part of, where, like you said, they think of this guy as a Nova Pro guy, or maybe they think of themselves as Nova Pro fans. I think that's one of the things that drew me to Nova, honestly. Even if you put aside my relationships with the people that run it and the fact that we're friends, I have plenty of friends that I don't work for. And I certainly have plenty of friends that I would not drive from Greensboro to DC for. But I got the impression at Nova that I was a part of something cool, and I was a part of something special, and that has just grown from month to month and show to show. It's a cool vibe up there. It really is. Anyone that's in driving distance needs to check it out. And I mean, we've had fans fly in, which is a big compliment. But yeah, it's a great vibe. It's a great communal kind of vibe.
Speaking of a communal vibe, so, you know, both promotions, you guys are part of the PWI Pro family, and there is, a, you know, just to be transparent about it, there's an obvious relationship between PWI Pro and PWP, the website. But I was always kind of wondering, and some fans have asked us this on Twitter. It's actually one of the questions we got when I asked people to send an email. They were kind of wondering, so they noticed there are promotions in Canada and even in the UK for PWI Pro. Are any of those talents, like, is there ever going to be some type of talent exchange with the promotions here, such as CWF Mid-Atlantic or Nova Pro, with the international talents that could be brought in? Or is that just something more of a PWI situation, like they would deal with that?
Boy, it'd be a cool thing to do WrestleMania weekend some year, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, it would, Stutzy.
You know, I will there be? I certainly hope so. There has been so much. You know, there was a thing a couple of years ago where the Killbillies were supposed to go to England, and that, you know, just, there's a lot of logistics to work out there. And when you're dealing with, again, I'll speak candidly, when you're dealing with sometimes organizations that operate on a budget, that creates a lot of unique scenarios, that creates a lot of where either A, you know, something can be talked about, but at the end of the day, it just doesn't make good financial sense, or you can talk about something, but at the end of the day, you know, hey, this guy would love to go, and he was in, and he was on board for it, but this other thing has come up that's closer to home, where he can do this thing or this thing. I'm not meaning to be vague, but, you know, those are the kind of issues that come up. Will there at some point be a true pro wrestling international convention and show, supercard, something? I certainly hope so. And I know others amongst us certainly hope so as well. It's a lot of logistics, and it's a lot of, you know, loops to kind of jump through, but there's been conversations, and I think one day one of those conversations, one of those pie in the sky dreams will pan out, and there'll be something cool that really plays into the international aspect.
Yeah, no, and I would venture to say, and Kevin, I'm sure you can back me up here, that the listeners to our podcast and that read our website, they understand. I think your answer was more than adequate and understandable, because it comes down to money, and if it makes sense, so.
Right, and I think, and it's funny now. I have a better appreciation for. It's easy for someone on Twitter to throw to a company, you should bring in this guy or you should bring in this person, and it's just not always that easy. And sometimes it just doesn't make sense. And while maybe you would love to use that person, maybe that person, there's a million reasons that things can go wrong. I can say for certainty in the state of Virginia, it's a little trickier since people have to get licenses to work. And my understanding is you need an American Social Security number to work in Virginia. Now, Ring of Honor has had Japanese and Canadian talent years ago when they ran in Virginia. But Nova Pro is not Ring of Honor. So I don't know how that all works out. So I would just say, don't hold your breath, but obviously it would be really awesome if somehow we could work that out.
Yeah, I think, you know, also there's a, it takes a special kind of guy to be in wrestling to begin with. And then from that group, there's a smaller group that really chases this hard. You know, there's a bigger group that is perfectly content just wrestling in their hometown, and maybe they manage a gym, or maybe they work at Taco Bell or whatever. But, you know, it's tough to get them to wrestle out of town or even out of state. So there's a smaller group inside the group of wrestlers that would even be willing to, you know, go to England for a week or go to Japan or go whatever. And quite frankly, wrestlers in that regard will sometimes talk the same way that you're describing fans talk. They go, oh man, I would drop anything to get a tour of Japan. Well, and then that call comes, and then you have to figure out, okay, who's going to take care of my kid for this week, or who's going to do this, or how is this going to get paid, or whatever. There's a lot of logistics to work out, and it takes kind of a sort of a special set of circumstances to have somebody who can just drop everything and go for a week or whatever.
And you know what's funny is I didn't even know about this until a few years ago when I was talking to Drew Cordero of Beyond Wrestling. But in that particular area, there was something that they used to call the New England mindset of wrestling, where I feel like, you know, the three of us here, I can say with pretty certainly we all have our pulse on the wrestling landscape in terms of companies and whatnot. But for them, there was a lot of wrestlers there where you wrestled till you worked for WWE or you wrestled till you didn't work for WWE. And things like the Indies, Japan, Mexico, Canada, whatever else, just weren't in their purview. They didn't care. That wasn't something that wasn't the road to success. You went through a Kowalski school or something along those lines, and then you hopefully make it to the WWE. So there's probably wrestlers out there, too, who feel like maybe they don't want to go to a certain place of this because they don't feel like it does anything for them or that's not how they were trained or et cetera, et cetera. And I thought it was kind of interesting that up until like even like 2008, that was a pretty prevalent mindset in that area until a lot of guys now are really breaking out. So you just don't know people's circumstances or mindsets or goals or what have you.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that assessment.
Actually, that's interesting that you asked because we did get two email questions kind of asking the same thing, and it's along those lines, Kevin, because they're asking – so the guys that they watch in Cedar with Mid-Atlantic, and they don't mention where they live, but they say they watch them on Worldwide, so I'm assuming either on YouTube or on TV. But they were mentioning how they see them there. They see them in PWX, but that they don't see them going – like spreading out, and they were wondering if this was a contractual situation. And yeah, so I mean, Brad, I, either of you, if you want to answer, I'm just going to throw this out there. Look, not every independent promotion has exclusive contracts. That's not to say that some are better than others. It's just how the independent scene has worked for years until what, Kevin, like 2009, 10, when DGUSA started doing exclusives. So,
yes, absolutely not a contractual situation whatsoever. I would venture to say that even if I were to win the lottery and be able to do anything I want at CWF, I still would not bother with contractual exclusivity or anything like that. A very real answer to that, though, is we have it pretty good at CWF, and it creates, I guess you'd call it a complacency, where guys can wrestle almost every week, usually about three times a month, 30, 40 miles from home, and they're over like gods in that building. Every fan in that building knows who they are and knows who what their stuff is and what their story is. And it can kind of create complacency.
If I may interject, I would not call that complacency. I would say that's actually a pretty awesome and special set of circumstance where a talent can go around a certain loop. And I mean, this is how it used to be. They would work a loop, and in each town they wouldn't stay longer than they should, but they were very well known. And the Mid-Atlantic has a huge tradition – or not huge, long tradition of having those types of guys. And, you know, that isn't to say – like you were maybe mentioning Eric Royal would like to go work in PWG and work for like Bola or something. But I think CWF has something very similar. You have a group of fans that understand the characters and even not even the characters, the wrestlers themselves and appreciate it because you can hear it on the Worldwide TV series that these fans know these guys and it is very much PWG-esque. You know, try in the sense of their fans that they always go to these shows and these are the wrestlers they want to see. So I don't know if it's complacency, but for me, I think it's something special that maybe not every wrestler can get. You know, you hear of guys in the Northeast trying to do that New Jersey, New York loop, and sometimes when they're asked to go down to Philly, they're like, even though Philly's a big wrestling town, they're just like, it's kind of far. I don't think I want to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is special, and I appreciate you saying that. But yeah, it breeds that mindset of I can always wrestle at the Sportatorium, so it might make someone less inclined to, you know, get in a car for 6 hours and head up to Nova Pro and, you know, be away from their wife and their family and take a day off work and then drive all night to get home and maybe go in at 6 a.m. at some job they don't like or whatever. You know, when I say complacency, it's more of a professional complacency of maybe you don't chase it quite so hard, and maybe you're not actively looking for bookings and things like that, because that, hey man, that hometown promotion right here in my backyard, you know, takes care of me and provides me with everything I need and makes me feel fulfilled. It is very special, and I certainly did not mean to demean it in any way, but I do think it can make some guys less hungry. I'll put it that way.
For sure. Oh,
I do think there's a myth in indie wrestling that everybody's trying to be the WWE World Champion. I just don't think that's true. I find that there's a lot of people who enjoy pro wrestling, who maybe they want to go wrestle CWF or they want to go wrestle their local company that once a month, you know, do that on a Friday night or Saturday night for fun, wrestle in front of their friends and family. And that scratches their itch. You know, they don't have the desire to go any further. And I look at two people, somebody who wrestles for CWF, Brad Attitude, who had his stint in FCW, who went to those top indies like Evolve and DGUSA for a bit. And now he's at the point where he pretty much only wrestles in North Carolina. And so he kind of had his, what I presume he feels was his run, his shot at the top. And while he still has a passion for professional wrestling, he doesn't want to maybe not travel the world anymore. And he's totally fine doing that. And Josh Prohibition, you know, he used to be that guy who was wrestling two or three shows every single weekend for a few years in the early 2000s. And now he's a teacher, he has kids, he has a wife, and he only wrestles AIW once a month to help out that promotion and get what he wants. I personally don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if you get into wrestling and know exactly what you want, in a way, if everybody is trying to rush and become WWE champion, that just makes it harder for the guys who really, really do want that. And I think if those guys are staying out of the way of those who are the guys who are willing to drive X amount of hours for little to no pay, for little to no sleep, in the pursuit of that dream, I think it makes for a less crowded elevator. So those who do have the passion have even maybe a more quicker way to get to the top.
Yeah. And even to speak very candidly, in a lot of ways, we rely on those guys to stay alive. Because I have to be sharp enough to spot those tendencies in people's personalities and go, okay, you know, this guy here, we might lose at some point, but this guy is always going to be around. He enjoys it. He feels comfortable here. You know, this might be his ceiling. I can build around and I can, you know, really give the ball to and he can anchor a position for me because I feel like, you know, barring something completely unexpected, he'll always be around. He'll always put it in the end zone for us. And, you know, without that, then you become a situation where the turnover rate can get really high and really out of whack, such as, you know, we've mentioned Ring of Honor a couple of times, you know, even worse now with Roddy gone, but you know, you look at the Ring of Honor roster from 2004, 2005, 2006, look at it now, you know, the turnaround rate has been tremendous. Whereas like CWF from 2008-ish, there's a lot of guys that are still here and that have been here all along and that have, you know, put in 8, 9, 10 years here. And I am grateful to them for always sticking with us and always being around. Cause like I said, you can build around those guys that's just their personality. Like you said, they get plenty of personal and professional satisfaction out of doing, you know, just doing our shows or doing whatever's in the area.
What I'm hearing is that there's a real good chance that we will see Aaron Biggs and Mecha Mercenary versus Shane Taylor and Keith Lee, because Biggs and Mercenary will always be around. That's what I'm hearing. So,
Mecha and Aaron will fight anyone at any time if the sandwich is right.
That's literally the story that Kevin explained. That's awesome.
It's very clear the sandwiches in Nova Pro are right, and they are in fact
very much so. Very much so.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate the time. So the last email question we got before I ask you about the November shows here, and I appreciate you coming on to talk to us about this, Stutzy. The last longtime reader of Peter P., and he was wondering about the TV. If writing for TV is different than writing per, I guess, what you know, per show in the past?
Ooh, that's a good question. Is writing for TV different than writing for shows in the past? To some extent, yeah. You know, CWF has always survived on a business model that necessitated us running twice a month. Just the logistics and the numbers and you know, once everything, you know, was kind of accounted for, we needed to be able to produce two shows a month to pay our bills. So there's always been a linear sort of quality to it. There's always been a, you know, things need to go from show to show, and very, very few things at CWF are ever a standalone, you know, quote unquote spot show. Most everything, you know, tries to have some role in a bigger story. If anything changed with the TV, it was, and with the TV going to YouTube in particular, which I felt was very, very important. I would have probably not signed on to do the show if, let's say, for instance, we were only going to be on, CWF247.com and you had to go to the website and, or if you had to log in or anything like, I probably would not have done the show. I was actually the one who said we have to be on YouTube. That's the only way I'm willing to do the show because YouTube is so easy. It's so user-friendly. There's a PlayStation app. There's apps on your phone. You don't have to log into anything. You don't have to be a member of anywhere. You just click and you're watching it. You can watch it on the subway. You can watch it in the library. So YouTube was an incredible tool for us. I would not be producing a weekly television show if not for YouTube, because I felt like if we're going to do it, the way to do it is to get it accessible to as many eyeballs as possible. That's why it's free. That's why there's no login. There's no subscription. There's no, hey, $10 a month. There's nothing like that. I just want people to see our stuff and get to know our guys. And, you know, maybe there's a guy in Michigan who runs shows who will see our stuff and go, man, I need to book Chet Sterling, and he'll get to go, and, or fans that will buy a shirt or whatever. You know, that was kind of the mindset. So if anything, the changes in writing for television came from realizing that there were things that we could do that would have appeal outside of our building. Whereas there's been things that we have, you know, said, hey, you know, this may not get the best reaction. This may not be, get the, I shouldn't say best. This may not get a super strong reaction in the building, but, you know, it will play very well on television. And guys online know these guys, and you know, they have a following online that they'll share this with, and things of that nature. Shell, if the way we did television, the way we are doing television, broadens my horizons in as much as I think if we were just doing our every 2 week shows, I probably would not have the inclination to say yes. Car from Florida of guys who I might even put on the show sight unseen. Yeah, come on up. Why not? Screw it. You know, we'll find something for you. Whereas before, I think I was a little more picky. And it's like, well, you know, they're our fans don't know them, quote unquote. Now our fans are all over and know a lot of people. So it's broadened my horizons in a nutshell.
I was going to say, because I think you're also on, what, one or two channels locally, and if I may say, what I've noticed is also you guys are doing these, I don't know if you would consider them spot shows, but they, since they are, like, you do, like, a Rising Generation League show, or you, I've noticed, like, there are some results, but they were, like, for private parties or something like that, like, someone asked to have a show, something like that. And I feel
yeah, we
like
do
that,
all kinds of stuff.
I feel like that's increased since you guys, you know, not only doing the worldwide on YouTube, but also on, I guess, local TV channels.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we, you know, local television is again has another set of headaches. So it's been, you know, sporadic. What we do best and what we are most happy with is the YouTube show. And it's been the most rewarding also. We have, you know, we have the luxury of having a building where the ring is set up all the time. There's no, you know, and the wrestling school is housed there, and we, you know, we have the luxury of pretty much being able to put a show together whenever. There was a week and a half ago on or I guess, you know, it's been what, almost 2 weeks ago now. There was a Saturday where kind of everybody was off. Just for whatever reason, there were no shows in the area. This was the Saturday after the Rumble before the Greensboro show. So that'd be like the 7th or the 8th of October. And everybody was off, and there was no shows in the area, and there were literally fans contacting me at 11 o'clock in the morning being like, hey, you guys should run an RGL show tonight. We would come if you did. And I'm not going to lie, we thought about it, which would be, you know, how absurd does that sound for other people to literally run a show on like 7 or 8 hours notice? But, you know, we have the facility. It's ours. We can do with it whatever we want. And so, yeah, we have a couple of services that we offer where we'll do pro wrestling-themed birthday parties for people of all ages. And we have done some for adults, mostly for kids, but we've done a few for adults. And, you know, or for whatever reason, some, you know, for whatever reason, if someone wanted to, you know, rent the venue and put on some type of event of their own, we offer, you know, we have that service. Like our friends at Chikara have taken advantage of coming down and using our building. Yeah, there's a couple of you know, different services that we offer. If anyone, you know, wanted to do, you know, some kind of private fundraiser of some kind or something like that, we would do that. It's a luxury and it's a blessing to have, you know, our own building where the ring is set up, where like I said the other night, we genuinely, we talked about it. We thought about it for a few minutes of, hey, could we really put a show together, even a student show? Could we really put a show together in the next 7 hours? And honestly, I think we could have. That is one of the things that's really neat and unique and special about CWF is the benefit of having our own building and our own crew. And truthfully, if we had decided to go, we could have put a Rising Generation League show on in 7 or 8 hours, on 7 or 8 hours notice, and had, you know, a respectable, albeit small, group of people that would have come. And that's a real testament to the dedication of our audience, and hopefully a testament to the goodwill that we've built up with them, where they understand and they know that it will be worth their time to come. That's our greatest compliment, I think, is when people know that it will be worth it to come.
So, see Lucha Underground, you can come to North Carolina and put on a show right there. Stuff, yeah. You just put that out there. So, absolutely. And hopefully your laws don't change like New Jersey or New York.
Anything that gets Melissa Santos in my building, I am 100% okay with. On board, sign me up.
There you go. But yeah, so before we get out of here, let's talk about Explosive Elements, November 5th at the Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium in Gibsonville, North Carolina. Come on, Stutzy, you can give us an exclusive here. Tell me a match. Come on. What's going on here?
Well, right now I'm thinking about Melissa Santos ring announcing in our building, and then that got me thinking about Trevor Lee versus Matanza Cueto, which is one of my personal dream matches. But Explosive Elements is going to be a good one. We actually... we talked a little bit earlier about the rep and the goodwill with fans. You know, it really is. The Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium is becoming a destination, and I'm so super excited about that. I'm so happy that literally on what is, you know, it's not, you know, back anniversary show. It's not The CWF Rumble that we've been doing for, you know, what, 16 years now, what is basically just a standard normal CWF event. We've already got fans that have bought their tickets from New York, from Florida, from all over. And that to me is just a tremendous, tremendous compliment.
Are you going to give Nick Richards, though, his no rope exploding ring barbed wire fight, though? I mean, is that going to happen? I'm assuming not, but you never know.
I think not on that one. I think if there's a ball field or something like that, that within the sound of my voice that would like to take on the responsibility for that one, we can talk about it. But I don't think we urgently need to be blowing anything up in our ring, in our room, in our building. So I will probably pass on that. Nick has, you know, one or two good ideas every year, and that wasn't one of them. But but
like
it's
a broken clock is what you're saying. It's right twice.
absolutely. But it's going to be a super, super fun night. Matches as they are put together will be announced on Twitter, on Facebook, and, of course, on CWF247.com. I do want to plug also that Wednesday night will be the premiere of this year's CWF Rumble match. It is the most fun hour of the year. It's the most exciting, chaotic, crazy undertaking we have every year where, you know, genuinely 30 guys, it's every 90 seconds, and it's quite a lot of work goes into it, and it's one of the most rewarding nights of the year for all of us. So I'm super, super excited to premiere that on Wednesday night. As for exclusives on Explosive Elements,
you really don't have to. I'm just, you know, I gotta try.
Anything, I don't know if there's anything to drop right now, because I definitely think viewers need to see how these next TVs that we shot in Greensboro play out, and how the CWF Rumble plays out. And I think that will give you a very good idea of where we're going for November 5th.
There you go. No, that makes sense. Yeah, so keep an eye on it. Wednesdays, youtube.com/CWF Mid-Atlantic. Guys, I appreciate you both coming on here. If there's anything else you guys want to talk about, this is your chance. Otherwise, let's go to some plugs, as we always do. Stutzy, I'll just start with you.
Follow me on Twitter at Stutzy, Stuttsy. Follow CWF Mid-Atlantic at CWF Mid-Atlantic. You can like us on Facebook. Please subscribe to youtube.com/CWF Mid-Atlantic. I'm still looking to hit 5,000 on there. We're resting at about 46. Almost 4,700, which I'm happy with, but I'm eager to cross that 5,000 threshold. So anybody within the sound of my voice, please subscribe to youtube.com/CWF Mid-Atlantic if you haven't already. Personally, I will be at Nova Pro Wrestling this Saturday for Saturdays of Thunder, along with the Sandwich Squad, along with Chet Sterling, Eric Royal, a host of others from CWF and from all over. Next Saturday, October the 29th, I will be in Wilmington, North Carolina. If we have any listeners on the Carolina coast, North or South Carolina, huge, huge event coming to Wilmington at the Swartz Center. Sting, Kurt Angle, Ron Simmons, Cowboy James Storm, and a host of others. Chet Sterling, Smith Garrett, Eric Royal, Mecha Mercenary, Eric Andrews, Lee Valiant, Snooty Fox, Dirty Daddy, bunch of the CWF Mid-Atlantic crew will be there. Super excited. And then Saturday, November 5th, back at the Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium. It's going to be a very, very fun time of the year for us. This is always kind of where everything at CWF Mid-Atlantic gets really exciting. We've got the Rumble in October, Ultimate Survivor, which is all elimination-style tag matches on Saturday, November the 19th, and then Battlecade, our anniversary show coming up in December. This is always kind of the most exciting time of the year for us. I think this year is going to be even above and beyond standards that we've set in the past. So keep up with us. Follow us on Twitter, visit CWF247.com for tickets and info. And yeah, holler at me on Twitter. I'm on there all the time. Say hello. We'll discuss our favorite recipes and our favorite 80s squash matches and our favorite Survivor Series teams. Don't forget that.
There you go. Kevin, where can people follow you and Nova Pro on social media?
Yeah, you could follow Nova Pro at VA Wrestling. I ran down the entire card for you beforehand. Come to Springfield, Virginia this Saturday. Really, I mean, the wrestling show is a big selling point, but you really want to come to Greavy's Restaurant and Sports Bar afterwards. That's where the real fun's going to be, where myself, Stutzy, and a bunch of wrestling Twitter are going to be eating chicken wings and drinking some beers. So that's going to be a really great time. Yes, buckets o' wings, many buckets. So if that's not a selling point, I don't know what is. So ran all that down. Then you can just follow me on Twitter at kford13, and we can I'll talk about Survivor Series teams and all that. The 4x4s, they're pretty cool.
Those I mean, they're no Hogan. All right.
I think Demolition and Mr. Perfect is a low key great Survivor Series team.
That's a high key great Survivor Series team.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie.
Go ahead.
I won't lie too much about the quality of that match, but I love 1990 Survivor Series just because it's so many Survivor Series matches, if not all Survivor Series matches.
The first three are the ones that I really kind of hold up as my holy grail, 87, 88, and 89.
For sure.
I like 90, but if I'm just working at my house or whatever and just put something on at the background, it's either one of the first three Survivor Series or it's one of the 80s Saturday night's main events. That's what goes on in the background of many, many me banging out a CWF show at my keyboard. Those events have happened in the background of many, many of those brainstorming sessions. I think it was Cody, used to say Dusty Rhodes used to call it geniusing. Leave me alone, boy, I'm geniusing.
You know, speaking of Dusty Rhodes, I was going to say, as somebody who lives in the area where Jim Crockett and Dusty and all of them ran, the fact that you have WWF stuff on in the background while you do all this stuff is surprising.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, honestly. Because when I grew up, my favorites were first when I was a young child were ECW and Mid South and Florida were World Class and Mid South and Florida. And then when I was a teenager, my favorite stuff was ECW, you know, by far and Smoky Mountain. But yeah, somewhere along the way, I just became where my go-to was like 80s WWF, like Superstars and Challenge and Saturday Night's Main Events just kind of became my go-to somewhere. I think maybe because I really like the format of an hour show, but man, they did a lot with those hours. They would have squash matches and live event plugs, and when that became a thing, they would have the control center for the pay-per-views, and they would have vignettes for new characters, and it was a lot of short, easy to digest segments that all look good and they were all produced slickly. Somewhere along the way, I just kind of fell in love with 80s WWF as my go-to.
You know, if only there was another indie promotion that adopted the hour-long show format for today, I think that would be really successful.
Wouldn't it be, though? Wouldn't that be nice?
I think that'd be pretty great.
Yeah, might do that one.
That's pretty amazing. It's revolutionary. It's not 3 hours. So, but yeah, so of course, thank you both for coming on. Appreciate it. And as always, everyone, thank you for listening and supporting us here at PWP. Leave a 4 or 5 star review on iTunes or Stitcher. And of course, use all the links and check out all the new reviews up on pwponderings.com. Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
5 stars or nothing. Don't bother with 4.
Yeah, I was going to say, who gets 4?